get into the field because we want to help people. And when you can't help people, you feel like you're not doing your job.
The only methadone clinic in Anchorage is forced to turn away addicts. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, the 2nd of October. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a man who has circumnavigated the globe in a sailboat talks about enduring storms on the Bering Sea.
Yeah, it's rather akin to being let loose in a tumble dryer.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com.
Anchorage's only methadone clinic is so overcrowded, it's turning away pregnant women. The Narcotic Drug Treatment Center downtown has 87 patients right now, but funding for only 75. The center places heroin addicts it can't serve on a wait list, a limbo that can last up to 250 days. Ron Green is the clinical director at the facility. He says he's seen a surge in the number of addicts in recent years.
We've just had this enormous amount of pregnant women over the last, I would say in the last 5 years, we've probably treated between 75 and 100 pregnant women here. So we're getting six a quarter. Every 90 days, six pregnant women show up at our door requesting services. So they have overwhelmed the system. So when you combine that with all the heroin we got on the streets here in Anchorage, we got a problem.
Why do you think heroin has become such a drug of choice?
Well, mostly the people can't afford to pay for their prescriptions anymore. So people initially got injured in a car accident or got injured at work and were put on prescription medication, got addicted to the prescription medication. My understanding is a one pill of an 80 milligram Oxycontin runs anywhere from $120 up to $280. And, you know, they can get heroin for $10, $25 a pop. So it's a lot cheaper to do heroin than it is to find the prescription medication on the streets like they used to.
It sounds as if the clients, the people that you're seeing at the center, don't fit what the common perception is of a heroin addict.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would be surprised, and I certainly understand that thinking because I certainly had a picture of what a junkie looks like. And right now we're seeing people, our average age is probably 22 to 24 years of age, white, female, you know, it's just they're your brothers and sisters, your next door neighbor, your child. People would be surprised to see our people. They're not the disheveled, you know, street people. You know, these are just normal everyday human beings that got addicted to either a medication or and somebody turned them on to heroin and showing them how to get a better high with a needle. That's what we're seeing here, and that's what I've been seeing for the last 5 years, that the people are getting younger and younger. We've had a couple of, I think we had one 18-year-old pregnant woman, but we've had a few 19-year-olds. We got a couple of 22-year-olds in here right now pregnant, so that's what we're seeing.
How difficult is it for you to turn people away?
Well, you know, we get into the field because we want to help people. And when you can't help people, you feel like you're not doing your job. And you know, it's not the, we're still providing interim services for people, so they call up here or they walk in and we will go ahead and do an assessment on them, or at least an initial mini assessment. We'll do some interim services such as they'll attend orientation with me, they'll meet with the nurse and get educated on HIV and AIDS and tuberculosis and hep C and things like that. And for me personally, they have to maintain their name on the wait list, they have to call me every week to let me know that they still have interest in being on the wait list. And some of the calls that I get are just heartbreaking. You know, people call up. I had a woman call her a couple of weeks ago, and she was just crying and screaming. And, you know, women call me and tell me they're prostituting themselves. And people are, you know, it's sad to take some of these phone calls every week, but people are desperate right now.
And, Mr. Green, how much funding would it take to keep up with the demand that you have now?
You know, I think we need a little over 100,000 more to wipe out our wait list, and that's because of the expense for the medication, the medical director, the nurses that would have to be hired, the a full-time staff person to handle the additional load.
Are you optimistic the state legislature will allocate the funding?
Absolutely not. you know, there's certainly, we have some friendlies in there, and, you know, I kudos to Johnny Ellis and Les Guerra and Harry Crawford and Sharon Cisna and the people who have fought for us trying to help us get that additional funding. But, I mean, we've been through this for the last couple of years. We request additional funding. They keep saying provide them with statistics. We provide them with statistics. They know how much it costs this state annually, which is almost $1 billion of what substance abuse causes. They know that they can save, I think, like $7 for every treatment slot or something like that, but they will not allocate any additional funding. In fact, they flat-funded substance abuse, I believe, for the past 18 years, so we haven't even kept up with inflation.
Ron Green is clinical director of the Narcotic Drug Treatment Center in Anchorage. Two Democratic Washington state lawmakers have reintroduced a bill in Congress that would prevent logging and development in America's roadless forests. In Alaska, it would apply to the Chugach National Forest in South Central and the Tongass National Forest in Southeast. The legislation would cement the 2001 Clinton-era roadless rule into law. Sponsors Senator Maria Cantwell and Representative Jay Inslee say it would protect undeveloped land in national forests. Cantwell spokeswoman Karen Clayton says the senator wants to protect roadless areas in her home state, as well as in Alaska and throughout the country.
She felt that the roadless rule was weakened under the Bush administration, and that there have been, you know, some various conflicting court decisions, you know, across the country about this. So really that the legislative route will hopefully be a solution.
The Bush administration allowed commercial development in roadless areas of the nation's forests in 2005. But in August, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals overturned the Bush-era policies and upheld the roadless rule in most national forests. It did not, however, apply to the Tongass. The Obama administration currently has a hold on development in roadless areas unless signed off on by the Secretary of Agriculture. And Cantwell says her bill would cut through the legal questions. The Senate version of Cantwell's bill will first go to the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski is its top Republican, and her spokesman, Robert Dillon, says the bill will be scrutinized in committee.
The bill would significantly restrict the Forest Service's ability to manage the Tongass, and I'm sure it's something that Senator Murkowski will look at closely and want to address when it comes before her in the Energy Committee.
Congressman Inslee first introduced the National Forest Roadless Area Conservation Act in 2002 and has tried to get it through every session of Congress since. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a film festival in Anchorage promotes local food.
If we could capture some more of those local dollars, there's fantastic potential to really build Alaska's economy and create jobs.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com. And by Tech Alaska, operators of the Red Dog Mine in Northwest Alaska, delivering jobs and revenues to Alaska for 20 years and now working on the next 20 years. Online at reddogalaska.com.
Metnuska-Susitna Borough voters will decide on how borough government is funded in the general election on Tuesday. Real property taxpayers say they've shouldered the burden long enough and that consumers should pay too. A proposed sales tax on the ballot would add 3% on the dollar to borough coffers, but many question the new tax's cost to local businesses. APRN's Ellen Lockyer has more.
When shopping in Wasilla, Houston, or Palmer, don't forget to bring a handful of pennies. The Matanuska Valley cities already have a sales tax on groceries and retail items, and the Borough Assembly's proposed Proposition 1 would add a 3% borough-wide sales tax on top of that. If passed, Valley consumers who shop locally will feel a double tax bite, and that's why Wasilla Mayor Vern Rupright says his city council stands against Prop 1.
It'll make the cost of doing business in the three cities within the borough somewhat prohibitive for most people, where you'd have your sales would be 6 cents in Palmer, 5.5 in Wasilla, and 5 in Houston. It's really not revenue neutral, and large property holders would benefit, but not mom and pop. you and me, grandma, and everybody on fixed incomes or lower incomes.
But Wasilla Real Estate agent Jesse Tanner is backing Prop 1 because of the tax relief it provides for property owners. Tanner says Valley shoppers are paying the city's sales taxes already and getting nothing back for it.
Our intention completely with this is to diversify the tax base. You know, property taxes have increased 47% since 2000, and the assembly's facing lots more projects here in the near future, and I only see an increase in the property taxes for just property owners alone.
Prop 1 caps the borough mill rate at 7.3 and gives property owners a $20,000 exemption on the real property value of their primary residence. But Mayor Ruprecht says that will benefit absentee landowners the most.
Large property holders, people that have summer recreation property here in the valley, aren't residents. So they would be getting the benefit of a property tax reduction, but then who's left here to pay for it? And that's the people who live right here in this valley.
Prop 1 could be considered a sales tax, a consumption tax, or a substitution tax, depending on who you talk to. Borough Assembly members voted the proposed ordinance onto the ballot, overriding Borough Mayor Talis Kohlberg's objections and veto. Tanner says the borough sales tax equalizes the burden of paying for capital projects that an increasing borough population demands. He says he's looking ahead to stave off the day when real property taxes skyrocket.
If housing prices continue to increase out here, or we eventually get to a point where we have $5,000 tax bills on a basic residence, you're not going to have people moving to the valley anymore.
Wasilla Mayor Ruprecht says 2 cents of the 2.5% sales tax on every Wasilla spent dollar goes to fund city operations. But if shoppers decide to shop in Anchorage to avoid the new borough sales tax, the cities will lose out. Supporters of Prop 1 say the tax will only be $3 on every $100 spent in the borough. Ruprecht says, let's do the math.
Depending if you had $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 a month of disposable income, on a scale you'd be paying anywhere from $549 to $729 more a year in taxes to the borough.
Two incumbent assembly members up for re-election voted in favor of putting Prop 1 on the ballot. Of the five challengers seeking assembly seats, not one is in favor of the sales tax. Incumbent Michelle Church says she's in favor of tax diversification. Incumbent Rob Wells says, let the voters decide. For APRN, I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Southeast Alaskans will decide how they want to spend some of their money in Tuesday's municipal elections. They'll consider funding school and park improvements, health programs, and at least one swimming pool. Several communities are also considering setting up a regional landfill. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Many southeast cities barge their garbage south to dumps in the Pacific Northwest. It's considered cheaper and easier than running or expanding local landfills. But a number of towns would rather keep the trash here. Craig, Thorne Bay, Wrangell, and Petersburg voters are considering measures that could lead to a regional solid waste authority. Craig Mayor Dennis Watson says it should save money.
We just can't see why we can't beat and cost something that has happened to be a ship cleaned down south, you know, get on a train, go to Oregon, and, you know, why can't we beat that in southeast Alaska and do it in a reasonable manner?
Opponents say a government landfill would lack the economy of scale needed to compete with private industry. Community leaders have been working on the idea through the Southeast Conference for much of this decade. They say a regional landfill is the most likely project and could include a centralized recycling facility. Watson says other usable garbage could also be separated.
You know, if you took the paper part of the waste stream and made biobricks out of it, you know, that's probably, I think it's maybe 60% of our waste stream in Craig, you know. And if you did it southeast-wide, you know, for all the communities in it, you'd create a lot of product. And so here you have, like Craig, with our wood waste burner, we could throw those right in there and burn them right there. So we'd be creating energy with this thing that currently is just costing us money and creating problems.
If the measures pass, the authority would still have to pick a site and find funding for land and equipment. Other communities would also be able to join. Many Southeast voters are also considering major projects on their municipal ballots. In Juneau, a bond measure calls for spending about $12 million to renovate an elementary school. In Wrangell, about $800,000 would go toward upgrading a playground. Petersburg proposes a $3 million electrical system upgrade, and Sitka wants to spend about $7 million from a small sales tax increase to repair municipal roads. Ketchikan voters are considering spending about $24 million for a new swimming pool. Swim club coach Martin Reichgott says it would be a major improvement from the existing facility.
The new pool expands from the 6 lanes to 8 lanes. The warm teaching pool area, the rehab, the aquarobics, has, I think, 30 to 40% more space for user groups and adds a slide. There is attached to the 8-lane pool a deep end that can be used for diving or scuba diving or deep water aerobics, so it's more square footage.
Opponents say the plan is too expensive and improving the existing pool makes more sense. At least two Southeast communities have anti-smoking measures on the ballot. Haines is considering prohibiting smoking in workplaces, and Juneau will decide whether to raise the tax on cigarettes from 30 cents to a dollar a pack. Some revenues are expected to go to substance abuse programs, but Wendy Hamilton of the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence says that's not the point.
Our primary motivation is this is a youth prevention tool. It's one of the strongest youth prevention tools. The whole tax concept is an avenue by which to increase the price of tobacco.
Opponents say the measure unfairly targets low-income residents and those with substance abuse problems. Voters will also choose mayors and members of councils, assemblies, school boards, and other government bodies in the election. With help from Ketchikan's Deanna Garrison and Juneau's Ann Sutton, I'm Ed Schoenfeld.
Fairbanks is in line for millions of dollars in air pollution mitigation funds aimed at reducing emissions from mobile sources. Fairbanks Area Metropolitan Transportation System Committee Coordinator Donna Gardino says $5.5 million has been allocated to fund fine particulate reduction measures in Fairbanks and Juneau.
And it looks like Juneau may not be designated as a non-attainment area, so that would leave Fairbanks being the only one statewide eligible to receive that funding.
Gardino says the transportation money can be used for fine particulate reduction measures that target mobile sources and help encourage environmentally friendly projects. She says that can include things like sidewalks, bike paths, park and ride share programs, and diesel engine retrofits.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at Primera.com. And by Northern Air Cargo, with scheduled flights to 16 destinations throughout Alaska every week. Northern Air Cargo, building strong relationships with the communities they serve. Tuesday, October 6th is the REAACRSA election. Polling places are open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Bring your voter registration card, your driver's license, or your tribal ID. If your name is not on the register, you may vote a question ballot. If you're unable to go to the polls, you may have a personal representative pick up a special needs ballot for you from the polling place. The election board can provide language or other assistance needed, or you may bring a person of your choice to assist you. This message sponsored by the Division of Elections.
Local food will be on the menu and on the big screen this weekend at the Beartooth in Anchorage. The Theater Pub is kicking off a week-long Alaska Local Food Film Festival today that pairs food-themed movies with dinner specials that highlight local ingredients. The festival is being organized by the Alaska Center for the Environment. Allie Harvey is the organization's Sustainable Communities Coordinator. She says the original idea was to just screen one film.
And the Beartooth took that idea and said, you know, why just make it one night? Why don't we really capitalize on this great momentum for local food in Alaska and make it into a whole 7-night film festival? So they really picked up the ball and ran with it.
So what's on the menu along with the movies?
There's going to be a special at the Beartooth, depending on what's seasonal. I haven't checked in yet, but featuring local ingredients. I know at least, I think, 3 specials or so will be on there. And I've heard good things about zucchini dishes recently.
There's one Alaska movie in the mix. Where was it filmed? And talk a little bit about what it's about.
Eating Alaska is kind of a ride journey into Ellen Frankenstein's move to Alaska from the East Coast. And she was a vegetarian. She lives in Sitka, and most of the movie is filmed in Sitka. And she kind of explores this idea of subsistence in Alaska, you know, what it means to kind of live off the land and think about what you're eating. And the thing that she stresses most about the film is that it's not really meant to give you answers. It's meant to be more provocative and to get people really thinking about where food comes from and how they get it, and just raise all those issues and questions. It's a really fun film.
Allie, give us some highlights, some other highlights in the lineup.
Well, we're going to be having the debut of Food Incorporated in Anchorage. We're very, very excited about that. And Fresh, which is going to screen on Monday. And that movie has a really cool grassroots base. The whole idea of it is that, you know, the licensing rights are pretty inexpensive so that local folks can afford to get it and, like, screen it on barn walls if that's what they want to do with it. And it's a pretty short film that explores national food systems and the benefits to eating more local. We're going to have a screening of The Garden, which is about urban food gardening. The End of the Line is going to screen, which is about overfishing. And then, of course, Eating Alaska, which is the one with Ellen Frankenstein and Sitka.
Do you think that this could possibly be one of the few bright spots in the economy that's certainly today we're hearing unemployment figures are 9.8%, nearly double digit. Is the movement toward people planting more gardens, being more concerned about eating locally, is that one of the few bright spots that we're seeing in such a devastated economy?
You know, I absolutely think so. I think that there's great potential in expanding our local agricultural system to support Alaskans. You know, if we keep Alaska dollars local, that creates jobs. You know, if we build more infrastructure to support local agriculture here in the state, that you know, builds jobs, supports our local growers, supports our neighbors, keeps our dollars local as we spend it on Alaska food instead of food from outside. The Alaska Division of Agriculture had a statistic from 2007 that showed that Alaskans spent $2.5 billion on food, and only 1.3% of that was spent on Alaskan agriculture. So that's a pretty big figure. And if we could capture some more of those local dollars, there's fantastic potential to really build Alaska's economy and create jobs.
Allie Harvey is the Sustainable Communities Coordinator at the Alaska Center for the Environment. The Alaska Local Food Film Festival starts tonight and runs at the Beartooth through next Thursday. '68-year-old David Croper is on his sixth solo circumnavigation of the globe. He started in England, passed through the Northwest Passage, and arrived in Unalaska earlier this week. KUCB's Ann Hillman spoke with him about his voyages.
David Cowper was the first man to sail through the Northwest Passage solo, the first to do it in both directions, east to west and west to east, the first to complete it three times. In the 1970s, he also set records circumnavigating the Southern Hemisphere in small sailing boats, going both with and against the prevailing westerly winds.
Well, I suppose in those years, that was quite novel, sailing around the world, and I just thought it would be rather exciting to do. You know, I was much younger then, and felt I could take on the world, etc., etc., so that's how it came about.
You would never guess any of this when meeting the skinny, balding man who opens your car door and discusses the price of a pot of honey. To say he's understated seems an understatement. He always sails alone.
Because I've seen so many boats that people argue on and fall out and all the rest of it. And when I entered one or two events and I relied on crew or people to come with me, I really got tired of excuses when the time came that suddenly Auntie Flo had died and they couldn't come and apologetic, etc., etc.
Cowper charts his course to avoid obstacles and sleeps in two-hour segments.
You know, I think I've got more chance of being knocked down by a vehicle in the street than another vehicle colliding with me at sea anyway.
And he carries enough equipment to stay safe in extreme cold and ice conditions.
For these journeys to the Arctic and Antarctic, I carry a sledge, tent, pickaxes, chainsaws, all the equipment that if one did get iced in, that there's a good chance of being able to be self-supporting and get yourself out of a situation.
That was necessary the first time he traveled through the Northwest Passage in 1986. His boat was stuck in the ice for 3 years. A helicopter from a nearby icebreaker lifted him off and took him to a town.
It's silly to pretend that you can just sort of sit out minus 40 doing nothing for basically 7 or 8 months.
Cowper traveled 500 miles on snow machines to check on the boat each spring until the ice melted enough to let him continue. This year, his voyage from England to Unalaska only took 41 days.
Now it is very considerably different. There isn't the ice. And the thing is that the ice is not building on ice. It's all first-year ice. And this is the serious question, that if it keeps on like this, admittedly the waters will freeze over in the winter, but it won't be the sort of frozen wasteland as one remembers it 30, 40, 50 years ago.
He said his passage was relatively easy, though the high winds on the Bering Sea tossed about his 48-foot, bright yellow, self-righting powerboat.
Yeah, it's rather akin to being let loose in a tumble dryer.
But Cowper isn't voyaging to track environmental changes or weather conditions. He's just doing it because he likes it.
You know, you can forget all the bureaucracy, you can forget all the nasty things in the world, Afghanistan, Iraq, etc., etc. And you can really, it brings you down to earth you can really see that not everything in the world is bad.
He's also photographing important maritime historical sites, places where explorers were lost or rescued. He says he plans on compiling the photos into a book someday when he has the time, you know, just so people can see the remote locations. He doesn't really want to write anything. He just figures he should put the photos out there. From Unalaska, he's headed to San Francisco, then down to Chile and Antarctica. He will visit some islands and circumnavigate the upper latitudes of the Southern Hemisphere before traveling north and passing through the Northwest Passage again next summer. In Unalaska, I'm Ann Hillman.
For just one time, I would take the Northwest Passage to find the hand of Franklin reaching for the Beaufort Sea. Tracing one warm line through a land so wide and savage, and make a Northwest Passage to the sea.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Ann Hillman in Unalaska. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Ellen Lockyer from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Have a great weekend.
For just one time, I would take the Northwest Passage to find the hand of Franklin reaching for the Beaufort Sea. Tracing one warm line through a land so wide.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. Primera believes the first job of a health plan is to support good health. More information available at primera.com. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.